It's a front-wheel drive car. I can't remember what it was. And he made an absolute cock of himself. Oh, my God. That's not fair. That's not fair. He will agree. Get him in. Get him in.
Loading.
He'll agree. I'm right. Drove all the way through Switzerland and everywhere else and got to Hero Square in Budapest. Did that and got arrested.
Did you?
Hello and welcome to Fueling Around. I'm Vicky Butler-Henderson.
And I'm Dave Vitti, bringing you the very best in motortainment every single week. Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs, helping save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance.
Now, don't forget to press subscribe if you're watching us on YouTube and to press the follow button if you're listening on Spotify or Apple or wherever you get your podcasts from. So, on to today's guest. And he is one of the UK's best-known entrepreneurs and businessmen. He's a retail magnate. He was a former chairman of Millwall FC and became a household name when he joined Dragon's Den in 2005. And he has continued to be on our screen since then, not least with me a few times on Fifth Gear. It is Mr. Theo Perfitas. Hello, Theo.
Hello.
Welcome, 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 welcome. Thank you for joining us. Firstly, I can't believe that it's more than 20 years since we first saw you on Dragon's Den. That, to me, is terrifying.
It was a long time ago.
Long time ago. But you'd obviously done some TV before that, but had you not done a little bit?
No, I did one programme. This is how the Dragon's Den found me. Just grab my tea, which I made myself for the viewers here, because you have to do everything yourself here already.
It's a self-manned operation.
I can tell. This is high-budget production. The only programme I'd ever done on TV beforehand was a thing when I was at Millwall called Back to the Floor,
right,
where they take an individual that's at the top of the food chain and then they sort of put him down to the bottom of the food chain and say, can you cope?
Right.
I was an unmitigated disaster. So they thought, this is an idiot.
This is the man for us.
This is a fool we can put on air.
Absolutely. We'll stick him in that seat. But I guess at the time, did you have any idea about the extent to which that was going to push you into the public eye? Because it was life-changing, was it not?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, then public eye is an interesting one, because I was already chairman of Millwall Football Club. Mm. I'd done about 8 years. Mm. So anybody in the football fraternity
knew who you were.
Knew who I was, because I did quite a bit of sort of news channel, normally explaining why we were much maligned, our fans were much maligned by the media.
Mm-hmm. Which is a full-time job.
It was a full-time job. So it was really very different, because when I was chairman of Millwall, people would acknowledge you from the other side of the street, but normally with a hand signal. Dragon's Den was very different.
Very expressive, aren't they?
Yes, exactly. Dragon's Den was very different, because once I'd done a series of Dragon's Den, then people acknowledged you in a much warmer, more friendly way.
Yeah.
So that was very different.
A different type of way.
Yes.
Yeah. What was your relationship like with the Dragon's Den crew? Did you know many beforehand?
No, I didn't know any of them beforehand. I think I might have met I met Jonesy Tallfellow once when he came to try and sell me something at my offices. But that was it. It was just a one in, one out. And it was tense, because don't forget, that was the beginning. The programme had no catchphrase, the I'm out bit.
Yeah.
It was made up as we went along.
Yeah.
Nobody really knew how it's going to work out. They did a pilot, which I wasn't in. Then they commissioned it, and I was in that commission. They swapped me over for somebody else whose name I can't remember now. Simon Woodroffe.
Mm-hmm.
So I replaced Simon Woodroffe. And it was getting to know everybody, and it was massively competitive. The egos were embarrassing, to be honest with you, that first series. And actually, after we finished that first, which we nearly didn't even start because the set was rubbish,
mm-hmm.
and the producers and directors didn't like the set, so they sent us all home.
Wow.
So we didn't know if it was going to be that. Then they got us back and they sorted out the set. And we finished the series. And then unfortunately, one of the dragons, a lady called Rachel Elnor, had some, we still own a business called Red Letter Days,
mm-hmm.
had an almighty cup, and the company went into administration.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
And there was a World in Action special on it. And on the basis at the beginning of the show, they showed these titans of British business. You know, she was on a motorbike, you know, powerful lady doing all this stuff. You know, we're all, you know, chauffeuring cars, boats, planes. And then business has gone bust. So it was, so they decided to can it. They weren't going to broadcast it.
Good grief.
So you might never have seen it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If it what might not have been?
Not been. If it wasn't for me and the tall fella, well, not so much him because he just he went AWOL on me during the process of the deal. I won't go there now, but you know exactly where you were, Jonesy.
We'll have to get him on now to write a reply.
Yeah, you do. You need to get him back on.
We'll stick the microphone up there.
He went AWOL, and I've got the WhatsApps to prove it if he denies it. it was texts, not WhatsApps in those days. We actually bought the business from an administrator and then made good all the vouchers that hadn't been, that were outstanding.
Okay.
Which then the BBC thought, oh, right, there's a story here. We can now show the show. And then she was replaced the following season by the brilliant Deborah Meaden.
Oh, yes. Superstar.
Then it went from strength to strength.
Is there a downside from a business perspective to being well known? Does it sometimes affect the price of things?
No, I think people...
People don't put an extra naught on it because they think they see you coming?
No, only when you try and buy a car.
Right.
Only when you try and buy a car.
Mm.
Just a car?
Yeah.
No other industry?
No, it's car dealers. Car dealers. Car dealers are the only ones that are so cocky.
Savvy?
Yeah, cocky. So the minute they do that, you say, right, okay, so you cut the price by half and you do that Donald Trump bit, you know. So, you know, he goes, well, she goes, you know, that's 100 grand and you go, oh, I'll give you 50.
Yeah.
You know, and you know you're going to settle on something like 70.
Mm. Yeah.
But you got to start low to get there.
Yeah, and then it just kills a bit of time.
Really. It's like toying with them.
Yeah.
In the beginning, you first set up a business in 1982 and you were aged just 23. And people now must love your pearls of wisdom and ask lots of you. I know when I started in TV, Jeremy Clarkson said to me, Vicky, whatever you do, don't go and marry a millionaire, become one yourself. Now, that was his sort of advice to me. I'm still chasing
that. Well, that was it.
He said that and he said, talk when the red light starts. He said, don't waste your time doing anything else, getting prepared. He said, just wait till the red light goes and then off you go. There were two pearls of wisdom. Mm. But what's the best piece of advice that you have ever received and from whom?
Oh, gosh. I know. I think there's lots of bits of advice. Even you're really as old as I am. I'm not quite as old as Clarkson, I think. I mean, he's very old and got quite portly recently, isn't he, as well? Bless him. You get lots of advice given to you. And some is really good. And some is really shit. And it's how you embrace that advice and how it relates to you. So things like, don't bet the farm.
Yeah.
Brilliant piece of advice. Don't go all in. Cash is king is another classic. And then you try and understand what that really means. And then when you go into business, you really understand what it means.
And it's true, yeah?
It's very true. Yeah. I mean, it's like, so lack of profit is like, it's like, unfortunately, it's a terrible illness, a cancer, but it's like cancer. It just kills you slowly, lack of profit. But you can survive a long time with a lack of profit. Mm. If you haven't got the cash to pay the bills at the end of the month, the wages, the rent, it's a heart attack.
Yeah.
You're dead.
Yeah.
You've got no chance of getting it together again.
Yeah.
So really the biggest mistake entrepreneurs make at the beginning is underestimating how much free cash they're going to need.
Mm.
And if everything goes well, of course, their plan, lots of plans are built around everything going well. It doesn't happen.
Mm.
You know, it happens and you need to be ready for that.
Yeah.
When that happens, so you need that extra cash. So you always need more than you thought you need and some walk in the street money.
Yeah.
So that really was, I think, some of the best advice that I've had and I've shared with many, many people since, and it's held me in good stead.
When it comes to your driving test, did you manage to pass that first time or did you make some mistakes?
Oh, come on. What do you expect?
I expect you to pass with flying colours on the day of your 17th birthday.
You're a girl and a half, aren't you? Well, let me just say, it took me 3 goes.
Okay.
All right.
Yep.
I was absolute rubbish. I was a nervous wreck.
Oh, Theo.
My mouth was dry. I was shaking like a leaf. All right. I was so... felt so awful afterwards. I just went in the room and closed the door and turned the lights out. I couldn't believe I was so rubbish. And the poor instructor, I'm surprised he took that long to sort of fail me, the examiner. I don't blame him. You know, it's so it did take me 3 goes to pass my test. Mrs. Pugh, on the other hand, just sailed it, pregnant, 8 months pregnant.
Did she? Yeah. Respect.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. 8 months pregnant. Showed me the way. How embarrassing was that?
Good for her.
So when you've heard those immortal words, you've passed eventually on the third time. How did that feel in terms of the independence and the freedom that you're granted, you know, with your license?
Well, not to rely on your wife to drive you
absolutely
around.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah. Yes.
That bit. We won't talk about that. It was great because it's fun to have that feeling that you can go anywhere. And I'm telling you, the second week after I passed my test, I said to her, come on, let's go to Paris. She's like 8 months pregnant, 9 months pregnant, on the verge. Mm. She said, what? I said, we'll drive to Paris. And we already had one kid. I said, we'll put the car seat in the back. We've got a car seat. I said, we'll drive to Paris. She said, I can't drive to Paris. I said, I'm driving. Oh, no, I'm driving. You're not driving. I'm driving. Mm. She said, you've only just passed your test. I said, yeah, but yeah, I know, but come on. And we did. We drove to Paris, went searching for the Eiffel Tower, went round that bloody roundabout.
But it's the Arc de Triomphe is the killer because everything comes in from different directions. And if it's your first big
peeing,
trip.
Peeing with rain. Oh. It was mist. It was dark. And really, it was above us. So, yes, it was good fun. So, yeah, that was my bit of saying yes.
But also, I guess, from a business perspective, that must have opened up different opportunities as well, didn't it? Because you must have been quite hindered, weren't you, while you couldn't drive.
Now, there is this thing called the train and the tube.
It doesn't go everywhere,
and
though.
And the bus. It goes most places. And I had my little attaché case.
Okay.
And in my attaché case was an automatic pop-up umbrella.
Okay.
Oh, Theo, you are the gadget man.
And A to Z.
Perfect.
Remember them.
And with the A to Z and the pop-up umbrella, the world was my oyster.
Absolutely.
I didn't need a map, what were they called? An atlas.
Yeah.
Till later when I learned to drive. Then I did swap my A to Z for that.
An atlas.
What was your first car and did you buy it with emotion or because it was good value for money, perhaps?
50 quid. The Mini.
Wow, 50 quid.
Yeah, it's fiberglass front.
Sweet.
Because obviously the front had been damaged at some stage, right? So they stuck a fiberglass front on it. It had rubber pulleys that held it down. It lasted about 3 to 6 months. I can't remember. Not long, because it was 50 quid. And the MOT was running out. And so I drove it to the end of the MOT.
Mm-hmm.
So you got good value out of it?
I did. Yeah. I felt really good about having to sort of trying to do that as we're going up a hill because the clutch didn't really have anything left in it. So that was first experience. But then I sort of upgraded after that. I went big time.
Well, we were.
So I was going to say, what follows the Mini then? Because there's got to be a lineage.
Yes.
Or miniage.
Yes. Hey.
Listen, an Alfa Romeo.
What, second car?
Sud.
Ooh, so you bought with emotion this time,
blue.
The Alfa.
Blue and brown. The brown was the rust.
Okay.
Blue and brown.
You see, I think Alfas are interesting at any point. I think anyone that's owned an Alfa is automatically more interesting.
And then when this blue and brown one had its own idiosyncrasies about starting, not starting.
Yeah. Funny that.
And the rust was, you heard this one before probably, and the rust was taking over. I moved to a much, much newer one, a white one.
Okay. Oh.
because I was in the groove.
You were there.
And then I went for my third episode.
Ooh.
Yeah, the Veloci, which is the flat version of it. It looked a bit more sporty.
Yeah.
It wasn't the fat one.
Yeah.
In Kermit Green. So I had three of them.
Wow.
So you were committed.
Yeah. I was, it was, you could feel the steering wheel. You felt you were driving a car, manual, clearly.
So
really, there was three alphas in a row. And the green Kermit, as I call it, was, the Veloci was my favorite of the three.
A quick bit of mid-show housekeeping while we're here. If you haven't already, please press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode. Or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. So I'm fascinated now by this journey. How do you follow three alphas?
Ferrari.
Fourth alpha.
Maserati.
Nope.
German.
Nope.
British. Leyland. Rover. Austin.
Close. Vauxhall Chevette.
Oh, a Chevette. Wow. Love it.
In rust brown, 1.3L. Why?
Well, why did
now,
you?
Yeah. I was going to say, now, but the reason I say why is because that feels like it comes in the wrong part of the story, because it feels like you're going like that, and then you've perhaps gone like that.
You're getting there. You're getting there.
Did you have a financial issue with work?
I changed jobs.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So the other three cars, you'll get there. The other three cars were mine.
Okay.
The Chevette, four-door, man, not the four-door, right?
Mm-hmm. Practical.
Yeah, four-door Chevette. The other three were mine. Was I changed job and I got a company car.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And my level was Chevette. Next was a Marina.
Yeah.
Oh.
Then if you... From the Marina, you went to the Cortina.
Yeah.
What was the wedge-shaped one in between?
Oh, the Princess.
Princess. Cortina or Princess. That's the one. Cortina or a Princess. So I was quite the lowly grade.
What job did you do?
So I went to work for L&G. And going around the insurance brokers working for L&G. So you got that, and I got expense account. But more importantly, the reason I went to work there is, I'll come back to the company car in a minute, but the company car meant I didn't have HP to pay on a car, which was like expensive, because I could always bought cars I couldn't afford, apart from the 50 quid Mini.
Yeah, yeah.
Clearly I couldn't afford anyway, because
it's all relative, wrecked, isn't it? Right? Mm.
But I got an expense account, and working for L&G gave you a subsidised mortgage in those days, before the taxman decided to knock all that out the window. So if mortgage rates were like 10, 11% in those days, and my mortgage was like 2%.
Right.
So it means we could buy a house.
That's a massive difference in your monthlies, isn't it?
Correct. Which means, so they give you the mortgage, and they work it out on what your repayments are on your salary at 2%, which means you get much bigger mortgage than you could get from any builder's society. And you could buy a house.
Mm.
But you did then have to drive a Chevette.
I think that's a decent trade-off, though, isn't
it? For a while.
Yeah.
For a short period.
I'd call that a perk.
Absolutely.
for a short period.
A classic there. What is going on today, then? Juicy stuff in your everyday fleet. And have you bought for emotion again now or for investment?
What do you mean now?
It's very what's in your garage and what you run around in every day, and what's a garage princess?
The Princess. What doesn't come out? I've got quite a few cars. I've got quite a few classics, and I've got some modern stuff. There's a piece of Perta that's sitting in the 488, which is sitting in the garage, which is delivery mileage. So that doesn't really come out to play.
Mm-hmm. And is that an investment for you?
I think that's an investment. When I jump up, the cars that sit outside that I jump into, I mean, you're going to bore the pants off you, because it's Defender. So I bought Mrs. P a Mini Works convertible.
Mm-hmm. Lovely.
Put a bow around it.
Oh.
Her birthday present.
And she said...
What's that?
What's that? I wanted a Ferrari.
No, she's got a 15-year-old Q7. She said, I enjoy driving my car. I said, yeah, but this is summer. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun. That's like 15 years old.
Yeah.
She said, yeah, but I'm happy with it.
Mrs. P knows what she wants. So
I said, well, I bought it now. Anyway, it's by far one of my favourite cars now, right? It's a soft top, unfortunately, but in the summer it's great. It's a go-kart.
Yeah.
You know, you can absolutely drag it around anything. It's fun to drive. It puts a smile on my face when I drive it. I don't have to worry about it. It stays outside, unfortunately, for a convertible car. But in the garage, there's lots of things. I've got a lot of Jags around the place.
Yeah.
I do have a few Jags. I'm surprised. But I'm surprised myself. And I hadn't realised it till recently.
Till you did a little stock take.
I've got XK150.
Ah.
I've got an E-Type.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a Mark II.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a Project 7.
Oh.
I've got a Project 8. And that's my Jaguar.
God, that is a lot of Jags.
Without realising it.
Yeah.
I never realised it. Just realised them.
Yeah.
I had them.
But would you add an electric Jag or any electric to your fleet?
Yes. I mean, strange enough, I'm having in fact, yesterday morning, the man came round with his clipboard to talk to me, installing my EV
home charger.
EV charger. And explain to me the differences. It was very confusing.
Yeah.
I don't know if everybody else understands what they all do and the different. And then the kilowatts. So I'm maybe one of those 22 kilowatts. I said, what's the best
22
one?
22 kilowatts.
I said, what's the best? They said, the 22 is a three phase.
Most people have a 7.
Yes.
At home.
So I said, well, I'll have the 22. He said, why do you want a 22? I said, because you just told me it's the best. He said, but what car are you going to put in it? I said, I don't know. Yeah. I said, the kids have got electric cars and we got one electric car. I said, well, what's... He said, why do you ask? He said, because not all cars can take a faster charge.
Mm.
So I could put a 22 in for you, but I'm not sure what you're going to use it for. Mm. I said, I don't know. You know,
you're future-proofing yourself.
Yes, I think that's the answer. Yeah. I said, but if it's the best... He said, so you can tell your mates you've got 22 kilowatts? I said, you could be part of it. But it's a very good question. So 22 kilowatt... does what compared to a 7? Obviously, it's three times as... But can it charge three times faster? All cars?
No. It charges at... it does depend on what your car is capable of receiving. Yeah.
But is it three times your bill as well?
Oh, there is that. Yeah.
No, well, because you've... Well, it's surely does the same.
If you're pushing some stuff out faster.
Yeah, but it's shorter period.
Yeah, that's true.
Short, sharp shock.
Yeah, absolutely.
But whatever, it is so much cheaper to charge at home than it is at any public charging thing.
It's horrendous, isn't it?
Yeah.
And at night, you can get special... He was telling me about all the special...
Different tariffs, aren't
they? So my son, who's got it's a brilliant car, the Kia.
Which Kia?
EV, the big one.
Oh,
EV9.
Absolutely cracking bit of kit. Agreed.
What a big car.
Yeah.
He put it around the other day. So he... charged it to full and it cost him £6.58 on his overnight tariff.
Mm.
Now that's not bad. So what was a tank of fuel on a big car like that cost?
It's going to be 100 quid, isn't it?
Yeah. I know.
It's got to be.
100 quid?
Yeah.
So it's that's got some advantages.
Yep.
Do you know, it's interesting when you were saying before about, you know, you were saying some of the cars, like the daily cars, they'll be boring or whatever. I actually think often that it's the most interesting question is what people actually take to the supermarket or whatever.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people like yourself have got nice car collections and whatever. And remember, like Nick Mason, for example, who's got a phenomenal car collection. But I said, what takes you to Waitrose? And he said, a Golf R. And I thought, it's really interesting what people buy.
Great
in
car.
Terms of, great car.
Oh, love it to
you
drive.
Know? And almost, you
kind
of
my
think,
Mini.
And you kind of think, well, if someone like, somebody who's got that kind of car collection, much like yourself, chooses that, it says a lot, I think, in terms of the everyday.
Yeah, no, there is, and you're the Mini, you jump in and roll it around. The Defender is a workhorse, and it does all sorts of rubbish. It's got two ears either side of the back of the car. Got those big boxes either side.
Yeah,
look like ears
for your
kit,
shooting kit,
a lot of kit,
hunting, shooting, fishing, and
all
drinking.
Kit, it's drinking mainly.
just kit.
It's kit. It's mainly drinking kit. It is a full bar.
Beautiful.
It is a full
beautiful.
Bar. So I jump into that. Drove that yesterday because my driver had the day off. Carl, didn't you again?
Hello, Carl.
Did you wave to him? Did you wave to him outside of that?
Has he recently changed jobs?
He's driving a new car, though. We have got a new car.
Okay.
We have got a new car.
Well, talking of which, of new cars, is there a motoring itch that you're still to scratch? Obviously, you've become something of a Jag man.
No, not more Jag man at all.
Well, you've got Jags.
You know, that is all by accident. So XK150, Play Misty for Me, Clint Eastwood.
Yeah. Right. Great film.
Great film. Cool as
super cool car.
School car. And then I saw one for sale. And I thought, same colour, midnight blue.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, that's so good. That is so good. So I bought it. So that was it. That was my first Jag. And then I got offered a E-Type by a friend of mine who belonged to the Jaguar car club, wherever it is, for somebody who passed away, bless them, and had it since new. 1974, it was, he said, the only problem is, he says, it's sort of lavender.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, unusual.
I said, lavender? He said, lavender. He said, and it's got a hard top. It's a convertible with a hard top. When they made a special edition, last 100 they made, they did hard tops for them. And he's got the hard top as well, his family, his wife's got the hard top. So I said, oh, well, okay. I said, what's the price? And I said, I always liked the types. So he said, you've got to go and collect it, though, because he passed away about 10 years ago. I said, so where's the car been for the last 10 years? In the garage at the back of the garden.
Wow.
Right.
Okay.
So here, you got it. Mm. So I thought, we're going to go and see this. So I went to see it, and it was lavender, and it had sat there on 4 flat tyres. It's fuel that's still been in it since.
God, see, I love finds like that. Barn finds like that.
Yeah, but it wasn't a barn find price, I've got to be
honest. Well, no, fair enough. They saw you coming, eh?
Because it was a lovely car. Very low, 16,000 miles in 1974 from new. So it was, but it needed to get it back up and running. It needed not bodywork.
Everything else.
It needed everything else.
So bodywork was okay, was it?
Bodywork wasn't bad at all. Mm-hmm. Bodywork was good. A little bit of failure on one wing, but we sorted that out. Anyway, but it was so pretty.
Yes.
I thought, you know, it's got a story to it. So
that low became, mileage.
That's how we ended up with that one. And then
the rest just fell into you like magnets.
Yeah, I always liked the Mark II, just for the old cops and robbers when I was a kid, the black and white films and Inspector Morse type.
They were a baddie's car,
yeah,
weren't they?
Yeah, baddie's car. Mm. So I thought I needed one of those. Mm. And then the other two were just special cars that they built. So it was just by accident, really.
But there must be something that is the poster car that has maybe evaded you so far. Is there something that you kind of think one day I'd love one of those, or
SL300.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I've got a 190.
Yeah.
I've got a very, very pretty 190. It's sort of magnolia, off-white with a very pretty blue interior.
Oh.
It's really, really pretty. And that's nice. Drove that to Monaco. Monaco, went on a driving trip, and we drove it to, me and Miss P, to the Monaco Historic Grand Prix, which was
cracking
good fun.
Event.
Yeah. I mean, and that's when I realised, as pretty as it is, it doesn't like mountains because it's a bit underpowered.
Right.
That's why the 300, I think, would be the better car. But, if I show you pictures of it, it is driving down through France with the top down. You know, it's such a pretty car. All the lines and everything are just amazing. So that's very pretty. Mm-hmm. I've never bought a 300, and I think maybe I should.
Why not? Yeah, exactly.
Because that will have the power.
Yeah.
Because the 190 is a bit gutless. You might stop messing around changing engines and stuff.
When it comes to business, then, have you made a big mistake that you regret that keeps you up at night?
I'll refer you back to my earlier comment about don't let things torture you.
Perfect.
Because that don't work.
Yeah. Mm. I know as well you've got a lovely relationship with Mark Blundell, former F1 driver.
I won't call it lovely.
Who runs a British touring car team. So you've got some motorsport blood pumping around you.
So I'm chairman of MB Partners and shareholder. And we set it all up, God, it's over 10 years ago, 10, 11 years ago. as a sort of sports marketing agency looking after athletes. And then we went into motor racing. Clearly, that's where the speciality is. And that's where, you know, Mark's talents are. Not as a driver.
Oh,
No, that he will agree. He will agree.
Let's hope so.
He will agree. Get him in.
Will do.
He'll agree. I'm right. Because he said to me, I've been offered a drive in British touring cars. And I remember it's 132 years old now. Right? And a little bit on the portly side, I said, you are having a laugh. Now, we've got a sports marketing agency. We'll be looking after drivers, sponsorship. And we've got some great drivers. And I said, and you want to go back driving competitively? He said, well, I've been offered a seat at British Touring Cars. And he said, I wouldn't mind giving it a go. I said, no. I said, as your chairman, no. Anyway, he just sulked like a child. Proper child. And then started losing weight.
Yeah, and got back in and raced a couple of years ago, was it?
Yeah, as you remember. Anyway, it was a front-wheel drive car. I can't remember what it was. And he made an absolute c*** of himself. First of all, he should never have driven a front-wheel drive. He'd never driven competitively a front-wheel drive car in his life.
And also, he's used to sort of single-seaters, great big engines rear-wheel drive. Aerodynamics. Right.
And he goes in with a lot of very aggressive individuals who are in British touring cars as drivers.
Elbows out
in a front-wheel drive car, right? And he's spending his weekends at the back of the grid. Right, it was, I couldn't stop laughing.
So when he got out of the car, he said, Theo, you are right.
He got a lot of sympathy.
Not.
Anyway, saying that, it was the beginning of something very special. Because having gone to watch him to have a good old laugh at the ex-Formula One champion, the guy who raced with Ayrton Senna, right? Le Mans winner at the back of the grid, right? And having a good old laugh, I've discovered what a great series British touring cars are.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right? It never really occurred to me it's such a fabulous series. So I sort of have to bide my time and not show my enthusiasm too much in case Mark got encouraged to race again.
Yeah.
And after the season finished, we sat down. I said, you were absolute and I hope now you've learned your lesson. He said, I'm not going to race again. I said, you're right. He said, you shouldn't be anywhere near that. You race Formula One, you race with Ayrton Senna, and the greats of motorsport, and you're going around in a front-wheel drive. I said, and you're 132 years old compared to these young kids that have got nothing to lose, and we'll just take that little bit more than you're prepared to take. And that's why people retire, Mark. He said, you got it right. So he said, well, we won't be here again. I said, well, we will. I said, we need our own team.
Yeah.
I said, but not with you driving. I said, I see you as sort of team principal, using your experience, but we need our own team. And so he said, good idea. And we did. We started our own team. And of course, for last, we won the championship with Jake Hill in a BMW, which is great. And with this season, we've just launched our new cars. We've got two cars now, Toyotas, Corollas, front-wheel drive. Some clearly Mark's nowhere near them. We're really looking forward to the season. And JP's got a team as well.
He has indeed. Plato Racing. Funnily enough, actually, already we've potentially booked half of the next series, haven't we? Because we need to get Peter Jones on, we need to get Mark Blundell on, and we need to get JP on.
You know,
so actually, you're doing us a favour here.
I could throw some more names if you want. Give a few more ideas.
More potential guests. But I'm conscious of time because we have to let you go shortly. Before we do, we need you to take part in our quick fire round, if that's okay. It's called 0-60, cleverly, because you're going to have almost exactly 60 seconds on the clock to answer as many questions as you can. At the end, we'll give you a tally. You'll then go on the leaderboard. We see where you are, etc., etc., etc. So, Vicky Butler-Henderson, if you're ready with the first question.
That's super easy.
The stopwatch.
There's no right or wrong answer, really.
That's good.
Oh, there's no really about it. There's no right or wrong. It's just a bit of fun. So, right. If you're ready, your time starts now.
Which car did you first fall in love with?
Hoffersud.
Who's your favourite Spice Girl?
Don't be ridiculous.
Hot hatch or supercar?
Hot hatch. I did have a golf GTIY with little rabbits at the back.
Oh, sweet.
Clarkson, Hammond or May?
That was it.
You got to
no
pick
answer.
One.
No answer?
No, they're just special.
Okay.
They're all three are special.
Brundle. Martin Brundle or Mark Blundell is what I should have said.
Yeah, they get confused. Mark Blundell often says he's Martin Brundle. Martin Brundle never says he's Mark Blundell.
That's very true. I've never heard him say that.
Name the coolest TV car of all time.
Oh, my God. That's not fair. That's not fair. Coolest car of all time. Jesus.
You're wasting time, I'm afraid, here, Theo.
And also, my stopwatch has gone wrong, Simon. I've got no idea where we are. We're completely freewheeling.
It isn't the Saints Volvo. So it's got to be James Bond. It's got to be Aston Martin. I think so.
And I'm going to say that's out of time.
Out of time.
Oh, is that it?
That was it. Too much faffing
failed.
Around.
Absolutely. And a failed stopwatch as well.
Yeah.
That's got no battery in it. It's not real.
It's Christmas cracker. Anyway.
Time for our final question, if that's okay with you. What is your dream drive? Can you take us to the road and, most importantly, the car?
Oh, God. Someone told me as I was arriving that that would be one of the questions. And I said, I'm not sure I can give an answer to that.
Brilliant.
So what have I done? So I like car tours. If I'm doing one to Le Mans Classic in June. So I've driven to the Monaco Historic in historic cars. So driven to Barcelona for the Grand Prix, done that drive, been through France, drove from Brooklyn's Mercedes to Budapest.
Yeah.
Did thank you, but you taught me how to do my first wheelies spins.
Donuts. You're welcome.
Did them in Hero Square.
Did you?
Yeah, in a Ferrari.
Oh, I feel like a proud mum.
In Hero Square, drove all the way through Switzerland and everywhere else and got to Hero Square in Budapest, did that and got arrested.
Did you?
Yes, I got the pictures. So that was interesting.
Ooh. A big European tour then.
So
clearly...
big tours through France, through what? And we did visit loads of vineyards. And that is it. And the trick is, for anyone who wants to do this, you've got to have a day off in between, full solid days driving, a day off to enjoy the place.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just turning up a hotel, going to bed, getting up, and just
doing it all
not
over again.
Doing it. So you need to lengthen more time than you think you need just to enjoy the trip.
And would you be in an Alfa Sud?
I would love to be in Alfa Sud. I would love to be in Alfa Sud.
For the memories, if nothing else.
Yes, the smell.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
The breakdowns.
The breakdowns, the non-starts in the morning.
For a bonus question, what would be the soundtrack?
I'd be Born to be Wild.
Okay.
Maybe.
Rawr.
I knew you were both going to do that.
And on
you
that
both
note,
gonna do that.
I think we're just about out of time on this week's Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux, as the UK's largest specialist insurance broker. Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs, helping save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance.
Thank you so much for joining us, and a huge thank you, Theo Perfitis. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it's been really, really good. Thank you so much. Don't forget to press the subscribe button on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Thank you so much for watching us, and we will see you again next time. Bye-bye.